Live, I want to give a quick shout out before we jump in with our guest to those of you who've never dialed in before. I've talked to a few people this week and they said, you know, I didn't know about that call. So if this is your first time or if you're back listening live, we want to welcome you and also give a quick shout out to my dear friend Sandy Martin, who has been eager to get on the line for the last hour. And Sandy, if you're giggling right now, you should be. If you're not, then I'm sorry for calling you out because I always think it's funny. Those of us who are eager to hear what somebody like Chris is going to share with us, as am I. Chris, I think you and I met probably years ago, but I don't remember because I have three daughters who tend to sap some of my brain cells out. And I think I really connected with you a year and a half ago at the event in Utah in February of 2019, because it was your ability to convey great truths with stories. And if you wouldn't mind starting out, Chris is the usual host of the Friday evening Sizzle Call, which, by the way, happens every Monday through Friday at 5:35 p.m. West Coast time. That's 8:35 out on the East Coast. And Chris comes from a long lineage, a long genealogy of amazing people. And I think your other amazing lineage is that you married into great royalty, great Nican royalty. So, tell us a little bit, and if you wouldn't mind, you've got a fantastic Nican story. Why don't you start there, and then we'll talk about French fries.
Okay. All right. Well, my Nican story is that about 25 years ago, I was playing a friendly game of flag football with a bunch of young missionaries, trying to be good people, but since they were between 19 and 27 years old, that's kind of the least responsible age of young men, and the most competitive. I quickly turned into a little more aggressive game of football, and I'm legally blind without my glasses, so any sport that involves throwing something through the air and being able to recognize your teammates is not my sport of choice. And especially when you have very expensive glasses and you have to take them off to play. So I pretty much just was the lineman on the team and would hike the ball, wait for everybody to stop moving. They'd tell me where the ball was, and I'd go stand by that again. But quarterback of my team talked a lot of trash and got the other team very upset. And when they tried to kill him, I tried to be the peacemaker. They went through me to get to each other. I ended up on the bottom of a dog pile with three spinal fractures, dislocations in my neck, a bunch of torn ligaments, stuff like that. Was pretty well wrecked. I went through a lot of medical intervention in the next year and a half. I went from paralyzed from the chest down to being able to walk with a lot of pain. But that was pretty much as far as they could get me. After specialist had said, well, I can't help anymore. A final one said, this is pretty much as good as you're going to get. You're going to be in a wheelchair. Eventually, you're going to be in a lot of pain the rest of your life. You're never going to have kids. And if you live to be 30, you'll be lucky. And gave me pretty much a never-ending prescription for pain pills. Nican came into my life about 15 months later. And after a rollout and purchase of a Flex, I started to make progress. Within 35 days, I was off my pain pills. Within a year, I was walking without any aid, had no pain at all. Full range of motion, and within 2 years, they upgraded my status from 100% disabled to not disabled at all. So Nican really did change my life. And then about that same time, I was talked into coming to a Nican meeting because I enjoyed the Nican products, but I had no intention of selling them. But the person who'd signed up, my grandparents, was fairly persistent, and he got me in touch with Dave and Valerie Johnson. And I didn't talk to Dave because he was always on the phone with somebody else, but I talked to Valerie several times, and she liked me, so she set me up on a blind date with her daughter, Melissa, and a little over a year after that, we were married, and that's what got me into I guess, the Niken Royal line, as Vance was saying. So yeah, that's what brought me there. And then my lineage is from Scotland. Robert the Bruce is a direct ancestor, and they've made a few movies where he's either the bad guy or the good guy. But yeah, so there.
Well, Chris, you know, you and I share the same common ailment that in our early 20s, we did something that we thought was normal at the time. You with football, me with jumping into, you know, a waterfall. Most people don't think that it's normal to jump off a 75-foot ledge into a waterfall. It's normal, but it's crazy is because our oldest daughter she did it this summer on her return home with a friend from Phoenix, Arizona, and stopped at, where was she at? Post Falls, Idaho or something, and found some cliffs. And I'm like, and of course, my wife looks at the pictures and says, what on earth are you doing? I just smile, and I want to say, well, she's like her father. I mean, what's the big deal? Mm-hmm. But when we injure ourselves, and I talked to a friend this week, car accident, and same scenario, almost similar to story to you, that on painkillers, pain meds, and a lot of folks think that's the only hope we have. And, you know, although it sounds like we're making a medical claim when we say, it got rid of this. Well, did it take the place of the pain medication, or did it heal us? Well, I really don't think it did. It just puts the body into a position, whereas God created all these amazing things out in the environment, but we don't get exposed to them anymore. And we're not out sleeping on the ground like, you know, many, many, many years ago our ancestors did. But Chris, when you think back, and I love the way you share it, that this is what Western medicine, you know, they gave you the best options, which a lot of times are not what we want to hear. Did you think, in looking back, that something so simple as today we call the MagFlex, or we call it a lot of different names, but, and again, I want to be careful. We all want to be careful that we don't say that, oh, we use this and this is the result, therefore, this is going to happen for everybody. Every person's experience is different. You've seen a lot. Talk about that for a few minutes.
Well, I grew up on a farm, and plants and animals, there's always something going wrong. Farmers are the get up at 4 in the morning and get to bed by 11 at night, if they're lucky kind of people. Because the best plans, the best procedures still fall short because something's going to go wrong. It was a cattle ranch, and cows do this crazy thing where they try to eat the barbed wire, and that's just not good for you. There is no barbed wire vitamin, but they're always having troubles. Horses kick things they shouldn't kick or step on things they shouldn't step on, and bugs get into the plants, and there's not a lot of access to medical intervention for your plants and animals out in the middle of nowhere, Idaho, where I grew up. There is one vet within 75 miles with a truck that if you can get on his list, he might come by. Most of what you had to do was figure out what caused the problem, and then get the plant or the animal into a better environment, and then let the animal heal, the plant heal. And so we had greenhouses and rooms and special food and all sorts of stuff for the animals. And we just got to where we knew, which things were good for which other things. And we'd let nature take care of itself. So, if somebody is exposed to, a pesticide or a toxic chemical or something like that, first thing is get them out of the toxic stuff. If you have a cow that just can't stop chewing on the wire, keep them away from any of the wire. And for the most part, we do get better. The issue that we have, though, is we've created kind of a toxic swamp and decided to live in it, where you can't really get into that better environment and let your body heal. There's all of these chemicals in the air, in the water, in the food. There's all of these different radiations that haven't existed on our planet for, you know, the vast amount of time that we've been here, that, you know, in the last 70 years we've started exposing ourselves to. And it creates a burden that doesn't allow your body to do the stuff it's supposed to do. I usually say that your body has a honeydew list and it's several thousand items long, and it's got to get them done every day for you to be healthy. But if you've got mercury and lead and carbon monoxide, a bunch of preservatives, and, too little sleep, too little water, and the water's not clean, and you don't have the vitamins that are the building blocks of the, you know, the honeydew list, it may only get through the first 700 of the 1,000 things it needs to do today, and it just leaves the rest of them for the weekend. And if the weekend never comes, they never get done, and then that starts to express itself in pain or disease or exhaustion or fatigue, whatever it is. You know, things with our minds. You know, we can do physical things to our body that cause mental problems. And so if you can take away that body burden, which is where Neken comes in, give you cleaner air, better sleep, better nutrition, more complete relaxation, it lets the body do what it's supposed to do. And so, like I say, you know, we do not have a cure for cancer or even for broken backs or stubbed toes. But what we do have is something that can just take the load off the body so that it can, the natural processes do the natural thing that we were designed to do. So it fixes itself.
You know, and that's one of the biggest things, too, that we find, and I keep reading this over and over and over, that something as simple as good, clean water. And again, water's not water. We all know that, but we forget that. It'd be like saying all fuel for all vehicles is the same. And yet every expensive, you know, you're not necessarily just European, because there's Japanese or other automobiles. They will specifically say, I remember my wife and I years ago had a Mini Cooper, and it was the premium fuel. It said specifically on the gas cap everywhere, don't just use regular unleaded fuel. It had to be the premium stuff. And because that's the way the engine was designed. And so if we're drinking just regular tap water, or we're drinking, I haven't found any of the bottled waters to be satisfactory when you just start reading how they're processed and, you know, that kind of stuff. But that, I love the way that David Jones last Saturday reminded us that it's not a coincidence that the Earth's surface, 70% water, and our bodies are 70% water as well. And yet, we're not rehydrating like we should, or hydrating, period. I love your analogy about bovines, about cows. We're not saying, and I know you're not saying, that we're all stupid like cows, but sometimes I am. And I know when the weather gets warmer, especially, and I get active and forget to take water with me or run out, I know I'm going to be on the short list. Something's going to go south, whether it's joints or muscles or getting a headache. And it can easily be remedied by going and drinking a couple big glasses of water right out of the waterfall. And it's so simple, so simple. And but, Chris, I want to segue right in, because you had alluded to this in you know, talking with Valerie Johnson. And not all of us have the opportunity to marry one of their offspring to get into the family. But it's a mindset different. And one of our members of what I call the I Can clan, Vera Prostrednik, who her and her husband emigrated from what used to be called Czechoslovakia, now Czech Republic, in pursuit of not only democracy and pursuit of the American dream, but she shared with our group Thursday evening that she was able to pass on to her kids, her two kids, George Jr. and Petra, the concept of being in business for yourself, and that it, if you want that kind of lifestyle, you've got to create it. And she said both their, you know, kids and her son-in-law, they have businesses that they've created, that we can do that. Nikan is the least expensive, easy access, easy way to do that. We need to go develop a customer base and all that. You told, and I'm segueing right all the way, all building up to, you shared a story in Utah this last week about creating the need, creating the desire, about the history of the French fry. And it really conveys a strong truth and strong message that if we want something, and I really truly believe in our culture today, when our daughter came home from Africa studying abroad in March, before she came home, I texted her and I said, I think all of us need to learn the word adapt and really start to adapt our mindset that things are going to be different globally. And I'm seeing this. I know 49 million Americans have filed for unemployment. But and we saw this in 2008, we're seeing a shift of people that are saying, you know, I need to go create it. I need to do something. There's got to be something I can now do. Rather than, there's nothing wrong with being an employee. However, we all have the opportunity. Nikan is that. So educate us on French fries. And I know you know the story because okay. You did a beautiful job. Go for it.
Yeah. Okay. So like I said, I grew up on a farm and it was in Idaho. And so the other thing we had besides cattle was potatoes. And most of the U.S. at least, and I think a lot of other countries, have a thing called spring break. So where the kids get to go out and party sometime in April, blow off some steam before the end of the year finals. In Idaho, we don't have that, or at least in the part of Idaho I grew up in, we have a thing called potato harvest in October. So we start, we get up to speed in October, and then we get 2 weeks off of school to go work from early in the morning to late at night harvesting potatoes. Because for the most part in the spring, it's just some tilling, some fertilizing, and some planting, and then you just kind of let the field go all summer long, and then there's very short window between when the potatoes are ripe and you have to get them out of the ground before the ground freezes. And so potatoes were kind of a central thing, and everybody knows that Idaho has a lot of potatoes. So we learned a lot about potatoes in school, and in one of our history lessons early on, and I've read about it a few times since then, I learned that, not everybody liked potatoes all the time. Even though we had them pretty much for every meal. But in particular, the French, for a long time hated potatoes. The Spaniards brought potatoes from the New World into Europe in the middle, late 1500s. The French and the Spaniards weren't always the best of friends and, always, competing and arguing and fighting. And, you know, there's this, kind of a caricature of French culture that, as soon as there's a conflict, the white flags come up. But for the vast majority of their history, they've been a pretty expansionist, aggressive, warlike people, known for their military and their fighters and everything. And so they pretty much wanted to push their opinions on everybody around them and didn't want to accept anyone that's from the outside. And since the Spaniards were, exporting potatoes, to undercut that, the French, government and their medical people set out essentially propaganda saying that potatoes would cause leprosy and other diseases, and that it was only fit for hogs. And so they even banned potatoes in 1748. There could be no potatoes in the entire nation of France. You couldn't ship potatoes through there because, you might spill a potato on the road and everybody in the town nearby would get leprosy and die. So they were just absolutely banned. And then along comes a guy named Antoine Augustin Parmentier, and he was a pharmacist. And during the Seven Years' War, he worked as a military pharmacist, and he handled the drugs and the surgeries. everything, but his camp was overrun and he was captured by the Prussians and spent several years in Prussian prison. And because usually when people are in prison, the people who are the guards like to do mean things to them, all the French prisoners were fed nothing but potatoes. And, you know, for a long time, their whole nation had believed that these things were poison. So a lot of them would, you know, go to their absolutely starving before they actually ate. But he spent a couple of years eating nothing but potatoes and grew to like them. And so when he was finally released after the war, he, you know, as a pharmacist and a researcher, he decided to prove to the French government and the French people that potatoes were good and would actually be a really good source of food for the poor people, who are usually the ones that suffer the most during war. And as, you know, France was, you know, all torn up, fields been burned, and young men had been conscripted for 7 years. There was a lack of labor, and potatoes were easy to grow. And so he was trying to convince everybody that potatoes were good. And so he did all of this research. And within a year, he had, you know, published medical studies on the glories of the potato and got the ban rescinded. But, you know, kind of like we are right now, you know, human nature doesn't change very much. When the people who are in charge say, you know, something is true, especially if they have reversed their opinions a few times, we just don't believe any of our government people. We just think they're lying and, you know, want power or money or whatever. So when they said, oh, young people and poor people, go plant and eat potatoes, you know, this was right before the French Revolution, they thought that was just rich people wanting to kill the poor people by making them eat poisoned potatoes, so no one would do it. And so Antoine started this huge campaign, not only to prove to the government, but to prove to the people that potatoes were good. And so he had all of these parties where he would bring in famous people from around the world, including like Benjamin Franklin. And they would have these big open dinners where he would feed like the whole town with all of these potato dishes and watch, you know, these smart, famous people eat potatoes and not die. But, you know, years of doing that, he even at one point started making, he hired an artist who would carve bouquets of flowers out of potatoes. He would send them to people all over the country, including the Queen. But it just wasn't getting through to people, and he hadn't been able to get past that prejudice. And so he came up with a plan. After the war, Louis XVI had awarded him a big plot of land. And so he, instead of building a house on it, he tilled it all out, turned it into a big farmland, just this massive acreage, and built a big stone wall around it and planted the interior with nothing but the potatoes. And then he hired impressive looking guards and armed and armored them and had them patrol this potato field day and night, you know, on the walls, you know, armed with swords and spears. It just made it look really impressive and put up all these signs, you know, don't touch my potatoes kinds of things, because he knew that the, you know, after you begged and pleaded for someone to take something, the best way to get them to do it if they refused is to then tell them, well, you can't have any. And so all of his guards were told to chase but not catch anyone who tried to steal potatoes, and to accept any bribe, no matter how large or small, if someone tried to get into the fields, you know, through bribery and not sneaking. Within just a few weeks of him doing that, people came in and started stealing the potatoes. And so all of these little farm cottages around his big, you know, potato farm had their own secret potato plot, you know, back in the woods behind their house. And after the French Revolution, there was pretty much a famine through all of France, you know, leading up to, that was one of the big reasons that caused it. It was a lack of food, and all of the, you know, the rich people were eating cake and whatever. Those little potato plots fed those people through several years of the recovery of France. And if it hadn't been for the potatoes that they had stolen, all these villages would have starved to death. And so, you know, Parmentier went through all of these different acrobatics to try and get people just to eat potatoes. And eventually he was successful in changing you know, French culture, and a cookbook that was inspired by his medical papers became, you know, one of the best-selling cookbooks in France and turned it all around. And so now I think there's 19 or 20 different French potato dishes that are named after NTA. And so the reason I was telling that story is we kind of have the same thing going in our culture, in that we've been convinced by essentially by big drug companies that have purchased essentially a portion of our government. You know, the FDA, by and large, is owned by six large pharmaceutical companies. And so after that happened in the 90s, we had things, medical studies showing that vitamins were bad for you, and that, eating natural foods could be dangerous, and that it was better to eat these processed things than to take more pills. And, now we're the one of only two countries on the planet where we can advertise drugs in magazines and on TV, and even to children. You know, you can watch Saturday morning cartoons with your kids, and they'll be saying, you know, ask your doctor if this drug is right for you. And it may have this long list of very rapidly and quietly mentioned side effects. And so we've been conditioned over my lifetime and you know, a little bit in my parents' lifetime to give up that sovereignty over our own bodies, our own health, to essentially drug companies that will make us feel better, if not actually make us be healthier. And so we kind of have an uphill battle where we have to demonstrate to people that these natural things, just a change in your environment, can drastically change your health. And so we need to be a little bit more like Parmentier, where we're doing creative things to get Neekin's products and the ideal of the five pillars of health into people's minds in a way where they're going to give it a chance. And so, you know, one of the first sales techniques I learned when I was selling insoles in Sacramento, California, when I had proposed to Melissa, I had been talked into doing one of those things where, you know, they come to the college and say, hey, you could earn $50,000 just this summer selling pest control or insurance or whatever it is. And, wow, you know, then we could buy a house right away. We wouldn't live in an apartment. That'd be great. So I went and I sold pest control in California, and that turned out to be just a horrible, horrible mistake. And so I almost ended up homeless in California 2 months before I'm supposed to marry a millionaire's daughter. So I started desperately selling.
That would have been bad. I mean, on the good, bad scale.
Yeah. Do you want to come live in my car? You know, not real good. One of the techniques that I learned, because I, you know, I was just diving in, you know, how am I going to, you know, in 2 months, I've got to have car, apartment, plane ticket, pay for the ring. One of the things that you do in sales, and they'll do it at jewelry stores a lot, is they'll hand you the ring or the earrings or whatever and let you look at it. And then they'll take it away to check the price or to look at something on it. And just those few seconds of you having it in your hand has created ownership. And so, you know, I like this ring. This is my ring. He took it away. And it makes you want the ring more. So it's a sales technique. And so I would let people hold the insoles, and then I would take them away from them to position them so they could stand on them. And so, you know, it created just that little bit of interest that would make them more likely to, you know, try them at least. But there's all these little things. So, you know, just being out of the box, different ways. Brody Craney, I don't know if it was his mom or his aunt, sold Tupperware in the 80s, and he'd seen Tupperware parties. And so he did Neekin parties built on Tupperware parties. And so he would bring all of his products in a brown paper sack and set it in the middle of the floor, have everybody sit in a ring around him. And then he would have games that he had created involving all of the Neekin products. And he would pull them out of the brown paper bag like he was a magician, and ta-da, it's a Magboy. And he would do all of these different tests and things and make them games. And so he created a lot of interest by doing that. One of the things that I'm doing right now, you know, you were talking about the new powders. When they announced all of these things were coming out and the new KVB was coming, but the old KVB had run out. And I years ago, when the first Nikon meal replacement came out, while my wife was pregnant with our second child, there were some complications right at the end. And so she ended up on bed rest. And then after the birth, there were still complications. And so for almost a year, I could not work outside the house. So I had my Nikon business that I had to handle completely over the phone. And this was pre, you know, there was internet, but nobody was really using it for anything. And I didn't know how to use it. Not only was I doing my business from home, but I was doing all of the cooking. And I grew up, like I said, on a farm where you would get breakfast. You know, you get up at 4, you go move pipe, get the cow's milk, come back and eat a massive breakfast. And then you'd go work for another 10 hours. And then you'd come home and have a massive dinner, go work for 3 or 4 more hours, and then you'd go to bed. So you had to have these big, massive calorie-laden meals, and that's what I knew how to cook. So a year of me doing that saw me go from about 170 pounds to 220 pounds. And so when the meal replacement shake came out and they had the butter stick challenge, where we're all supposed to, you know, replace breakfast with the I can't even remember what it was called then, but the previous KVB, and then you're supposed to bring in sticks of butter to show the pounds that you had lost over the month and stack them up. And, you know, some people had, you know, 40 pounds of butter over a few month period. And so I decided I would do that. And from Christmas to Christmas, I went from 220 pounds to 176 pounds. But, you know, I was 30 then, and I'm almost 50 now. And so I decided, well, let's see if it works on people who are a little older than I was when this originally happened. So I went off all of the Nikon nutritionals for about 5 weeks. So no KVB, no joint, no Siaga, no, you know, none of it. I just gave it all away. I still drank the Nikon water. I even took the insoles out of my shoes. So I slept on the bed and I drank the water, but everything else was gone. And I gained a lot of weight. I gained almost 20 pounds in 5 weeks just by going back to eating regular food and not taking the nutritionals. And now every Monday I'm doing this like Facebook Live where I've reintroduced the Nikon products to my life, and I describe what happens, and I do all my measurements and my weight, stuff like that. And so I'm 4.5 weeks in, and I've lost 17 pounds and like 5 inches around my waist. Around my stomach, up an inch and a half around my waist. So there has to be some way that you're reaching out to people, especially in the times of COVID, where you're able to get past our natural defenses. It's election season, and so I know that 9 times in 10, when my phone rings, it's someone wanting to ask for money for a particular political campaign, or to ask me who I'm going to vote for, so they can either cheer for me or yell at me. So my defenses are up, and everybody else's are too. So you need to find a way to demonstrate Nikon's products in such a way that you're going to create credibility for yourself and for the company, but also to create value for the products. So as like Parman TA says, don't touch my potatoes, and then, you know, guarded them. It created interest. People wanted to try them. And so if you can find a way through social media, through, you know, your limited interaction with other people to show that Nikon products are having a difference, making a difference in your life, and that they have great value. So we're not doing the, you know, well, they're on sale this month, oh, please. You know, that actually lowers the value in people's minds.
Yeah, Chris, that's one of the things that, again, you talked about the jewelry store analogy. And right now, in our culture, there's this kind of this fear of missing out. Dennis Williams taught me that acronym FOMO, F-O-M-O, fear of missing out. And that we see these shifts. And I really appreciate the fact that you brought that up, that we can get so distracted in what's the latest, greatest promotion rather than establishing the example to people like what you've said you've done with, you know, dropping weight. We can create an interest in people just simply by doing what we're normally doing and figuring out a way. Again, it's difficult when people don't want to answer their phone because whatever reason. I've got people that won't even respond to a text, so that makes it fun. But There is another thing that I think sometimes, and someone brought this up this last week, that with the Kenzen Vital Balance, the meal replacement, the simplicity of, hey, it's not just about having a meal replacement and dropping weight and that kind of thing. The simplicity of not having to spend a bunch of money on another meal, and the ease of this, and I see the greatest opportunity we have, the simplicity, because the older people, I shouldn't have said it that way, I'm sorry. The older we get, a lot of times we just simply get dissatisfied, and it's kind of a pain to be eating another meal. And I see that a lot as a first responder going into homes with elderly, and I'm talking 70, 80, 90 year olds who they just find eating boring. And so they stop, and therefore bad things happen. Here is a great solution. And I've looked. I am always looking at what's out there available, and there's nothing that even compares to what we have in that. I don't want to get hung up on that, but I really love your analogy and the story of a gentleman that created an interest, because potatoes, although they're a starch, when you have really good soil like they did 100+ years ago, all those vitamins and minerals are getting into that starch item. And when we utilize it, we're getting that. Well, we're not getting that anymore because of over farming and, you know, all the junk, literally junk, the poisons that we're putting into the soil. It's different if you can find organic sources, and they're not that much more. But with the KVB, it's such a wonderful solution. And we have to, rather than be what I call part of the I cannot club, we got to jump into the I can club. And simply say, you know, we can come up with creative ways to do this. I did something that I learned from Tyra Andrews yesterday, and I think my friend is on the call this morning, and said, hey, my friend, you know, Chris Bruce is going to be on the call tomorrow morning. If you're awake, would you like to join? And I'll give you the number. And the response was back, yes. Then I gave her the number. Rather than blasting out a text to 1,500 people in our phone, let's first find out if there's even an interest, if they're open to it. And that, I think, will, you know, take down some of the frustration, because I know you've done this many, many, many times. Chris, I look at where we're at as a culture, and I know the numbers. While you were sharing, I confirmed, because I had somebody challenge me on this yesterday. Having traveled through Texas just a week and a half ago, people said, oh, man, it must be terrible in Texas because their numbers are spiking. Yeah, so far in 6 months, a state with 29 million people, 386,000 people have tested positive for what Carol Noble calls it, the love bug. And it's very lovely. I've read stories. But that's 0.01% of the total population of the state of Texas. 0.01%. 29 million people, 300. And I shared that with a friend yesterday, and he said, no, that can't be right. And I went, okay, next, move on. And because let's not waste our time. So I'm going to let you have the last word as we wrap this up, because I know it can be frustrating. Do you have a secret solution for really finding and attracting the people that that we not necessarily that we know that Nikan can help, but that are fun to work with?
Well, you know, there's people who are fun to work with and people who could be fun to work with. We have a neighbor. We've had her for years. And I guess she doesn't really actually live in my neighborhood, but, you know, down the street and around the corner a ways from us, there was a little like half, plot. They used to have a little tiny house on it, and the house burned down, and the people just kind of gave up. And since it's kind of on the corner, And there's, you know, it's a really small lot. No one ever rebuilt the house. And so it just was this vacant, little yard, and it still has the garage sitting there. And, she lives, maybe a mile away. But she's an older woman. She's in her 70s. She's an amazing artist. She's lived all over the world. But she does these fabulous paintings, but she loves gardening. And so she bought this plot with the garage on it, and she turned the garage into like a little, artist shop and, not shop, but like studio, and turned the entire, yard into a community garden. So she grows, you know, every kind of food that grows in our climate, and it's just free for anybody in the neighborhood to go take. But even with that kind of generosity, she's really, really grumpy. She doesn't like most people, and she wants to argue with everybody about everything. But during COVID, you know, all of our churches are closed, schools are closed. And so my wife and I have been having like Sunday devotionals. So we set up a bunch of lawn chairs, you know, spread out for social distancing in our yard. And we, and our kids, we sing hymns and invite people, and they come and, you know, join us. And she's one that does. And she's come every week. And, you know, we have a devotional and try and share a message of hope and sing some beautiful hymns. And we've gotten to know a bunch of neighbors that we didn't know, including her. You know, she only eats food she's grown. She's very organic, very vegan. But in the heat, with her age, and with COVID, she's having a hard time, you know, with food. And she was asking, you know, about food sources that we have. So we told her about the KVB. And so this woman I've known for 4 or 5 years. You know, I've shared stuff with her in the past because, you know, I believe in that, you know, that 5-foot rule. If you get within 5 feet of me, I'm going to try and make friends with you, find out what you need, and see if I can be a solution to your needs. She has started using the KVB recently. And replacing some of that food debt that she has because she hasn't been able to raise her garden like she normally does. So I think the big thing is creating community, you know, doing something that can outreach the people, whether they're friendly or not, whether you know them or not, where you can create a closer relationship, and whether that's over social media, whether that's, you know, socially distanced, responsible, meetings out in the community. If you can make friends with people, you know, not looking for the next sale, but looking for the next friend, and create a relationship where you're trusted, where you're creating value in other people's lives, they can't help but start to notice the things that you do consistently. So if you are consistently wearing and using NeCat products, if you are consistently living a healthy lifestyle, that speaks to people, and you won't have to be chasing people around, you know, please stand on these insoles. They'll be asking, you know, why aren't you worn out? Why are you so happy? Why are you so healthy? Why are you, not bummed out at the, you know, the recession and being out, you know, I don't see you driving to work anywhere. You know, why are your lights on and you still have groceries and stuff like that where, you know, some of the neighbors are really struggling. Well, you know, I've created this business over the last several years where I can work from home, and it doesn't matter if the streets and stores are open. I can still do business all over the world, night and day, because I created a network. And so if you can share, you know, the concepts of NeCan and create these relationships, the business really takes care of itself. You just have to make the contacts. So I think that is the secret sauce, is being a really nice person who's interested in other people and genuinely want their lives to be better. It's pretty hard to fake, and it's really easy to recognize. People will recognize that, they'll be attracted to you, and you don't have to beat them over the head with the Kenko creator to get them to try the stuff.
I knew you were going to go there. The secret sauce, yes, going full circle back to pommes frites. Is what they refer to them in France, French fries, the secret sauce. And I'll tell you, when you if you've never tried the secret fry sauce at places like In-N-Out Burger or Chick-fil-A, there's different things they put in those sauces to be attractive. And it really is true. When we get enough Nikan inside of us, and I'm not just talking about the products, it's the whole concept of humans being more. The five pillars of wellness, and never, well, I shouldn't say never, but I don't think there's been another time, at least in my lifetime, where we've seen all five of those pillars completely fractured. And if you break them down, body, mind, family, finances, and society, all five of them right now are being tremendously fractured. And we've received texts and phone calls and emails from people around the country saying, or actually globally now, We just got one from our friends in the Philippines. What is going on in Portland, Oregon? My usual response is people forgot that when it gets night, they're supposed to go to bed. That's what's happened. They forgot how to do that. And it's just, to me, it's hilarious. And maybe I shouldn't make such light of it. But go to bed, people. That'll solve the problem. It's that simple. When the sun goes down and it gets dark time, go to bed. God did not design us to be nocturnal. We're not like the opossum. Then that'll take care of the problem.
Maybe they just need a comfier bed.
Maybe that's it. That's what we need to resolve it. So if you jumped on late, Chris Bruce has been our guest this morning. And I encourage you, hopefully this has been helpful for everybody. So SaturdayAMLive.com is the website. You can see all the recordings there from, you know, past several years. But, Chris, thank you for sharing, giving so much of your time.
Absolutely. Thank you. I love being on this, and I love working with you, Vance.
All right. Well, good. I'm going to bid Chris farewell.